Welcome to Liberty First University. This is a special class that I have taught to law enforcement students and to college students about the difference between a riot and a protest. I felt like this course was necessary because lately we've been seeing a lot of confusion in media, politicians, and even in the law schools and amongst law professors, calling things protests when in fact they are not protests. A protest is a very specific kind of word. It's a word that not only evokes a kind of emotion, but also brings about a certain amount of protection. A protest is what our First Amendment embodies. A riot is not. So we need to understand that the First Amendment is more than about words. Our First Amendment, Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of a religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or of the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. This is our First Amendment. Now, you know, everything that we do here at Liberty First University is based upon that history. Patrick Henry said, I have but one lamp by which my feet are guided, and that is the lamp of experience. I have no way to tell the future but by the past. Now, this history, this wisdom of history, is what encoded in the minds of our founders that we need to have a reminder to the people of their rights to freedom of speech, their rights to peaceably assemble, their rights to petition the government for a redress of their grievances. All of these things embody this understanding of protest. I mean, you can even put even the right to freedom of press in there, because in that right to protest is the right to hand out pamphlets and flyers and that sort of thing, to disseminate your ideas in printed form. This understanding of freedom of speech, freedom of press, the right to peaceably assemble, the right to petition the government for a redress of our grievances is something that our founders themselves battled with in their own government, as they had decided to stand up in the name of liberty in defense of their rights and their country. They realized that freedom of speech was an essential principle, an essential tool in making sure that we were able to bring truth to the people in the light of government-mandated propaganda. We have sometimes this idea that our current media invented fake news. Well, that's certainly not the truth. And if you go to the website, chrisannhall.com, and you read the article that I've written about the Boston Globe and their cry for free press, you'll get to see Thomas Jefferson's take on the press. As president of the United States, criticizing the press, actually even saying that nothing can be believed. And that's in his time. We know that Samuel Adams and the men started the committees of correspondence, as Samuel Adams said, to overturn the government's propaganda, to keep the people from being swayed and manipulated by the words of the government that were meant to keep them enslaved, to keep them quiet, to keep them subdued. Just simply complacent and compliant citizens, even in the face of attack on their rights and their liberties. So this history that brings about our First Amendment is a history that was so very important to the founders of our country. Benjamin Franklin, writing an editorial for a newspaper in his time of 1722. Now, my husband likes to point out that Benjamin Franklin was only 16 when he wrote this editorial for the newspaper. But in 1722, Benjamin Franklin, writing as Silence Do Good, makes these remarks about freedom of speech. He says, "This sacred privilege is so essential to free governments that the security of property and freedom of speech always go together. And in those wretched countries where a man cannot call his tongue his own, He can scarce call anything else his own. Whoever would overthrow the liberty of a nation must begin by subduing the freeness of speech, a terrible thing to public traitors. If government can control speech, if government can dictate the narrative, they're certainly not going to stick constrained to the liberties of the people. When government gets in control, not just simply by the force of government, by physical force, but also through coercion and influence and power. When government takes control of the narrative and the media just falls in lockstep with the control of the narrative, that narrative becomes dictated not by principles, but by politics. And when that's the case, you get the principles of political correctness that cause us to censor ourselves. And when we find ourselves in that situation where we're cringing over what we might say or what we might not say, worried about whether it's going to offend someone, that self-censorship is the worst form of censorship that exists in a society. Because that self-censorship is a bonds and chains that you cannot see. It is difficult to acknowledge, and even more difficult to overcome. Because you see, you're enslaving yourself in your mind, and that brings about a servitude to others based on opinions, based on feelings. Our First Amendment was not there to remind us to be polite. Our First Amendment was not there to remind us to not hurt people's feelings. Our First Amendment is there to remind us to be popular in our speech. The First Amendment is there to remind us that we are not only to speak our minds, but to speak our thoughts, our ideas, and our own principles, regardless of how they might be received by the audience. Now, our founders surely battled with government control of their speech. One of the most violent attacks on the people of our founding were these writs of assistance. Now, we've talked about them in our Fourth Amendment class. We've talked about them in the Second Amendment class. We've talked about them in America Disarmed. But these writs of assistance were not just simply there to enforce a taxation that the people did not want to submit to. These writs of assistance were a show of force of government to teach the people that, hey, if you come out against us, we're going to make life miserable for you. This is why James Otis Jr. called these writs of assistance the worst instruments of arbitrary power, the most destructive of English liberty, and the fundamental principles of law that was ever found in an English law book. These writs of assistance were designed to control the people. Now, as mentioned in the last section, this is precisely why Samuel Adams, Dr. Warren, James Otis Jr. formed these committees of correspondence. And they were created, as Samuel Adams said, the creation of these groups are to disseminate the truth to prevent the government from perverting the judgments of men. This is freedom of speech. This is freedom of press. This is the right to peaceably assemble, combined all with the purposed effort to petition the government for a redress of our grievances. If government can control your speech, if government can control the where you assemble, how you assemble, how you disseminate what you do, then let us remember that there is no freedom, no right to petition the government for a redress of your grievances. You will only speak what they want to hear. You will only speak what the majority of population finds acceptable. This is not about protecting popular speech. This is about protecting unpopular speech. And remember, when government gets in control of defining what is good and what is bad as far as speech is concerned, then it is just one fragment away from determining any speech that goes against the government, that insults politicians, that makes people uncomfortable, that hurts people's feelings, will be unlawful, punishable by the force of law. We do not have a right to not be offended. We have a right to offend. You see, people were not only searched and seized through these writs of assistance for their opposition to government. They were also thrown into prison. So you have these government agents enforcing the rule of law of government by raiding people's homes, taking their private property, making them fear for their own safety, and that fear for their own safety will silence you more than any sword. If you're worried about how you're going to maintain your property, if you're worried about the government coming and taking your stuff, the things that you need to live, your livelihood, then once again, that worst form of slavery sets in and you will silence yourself to simply survive. The British government was throwing our patriots in prison, some of them even in prison ships. These prison ships were the most horrendous forms of violation of due process and human rights. More people died on prison ships than during the entire Revolutionary War. 11,000 died on these ships, and only 4,500 died in the entire war for independence. This is what we call, in a constitutional law field, the chilling effect. The understanding that if you fear for your life, if you fear for your property, that you will silence yourself so that you won't go to prison or you won't die. This is precisely why the First Amendment was codified, so we would not live in fear for our speech. Our founders held their own protests, by the way. And their protests against the government were very, very offensive. They held mock hangings of their tax collectors, mock funeral services of their politicians, of their government leaders, literally marching down the streets with coffins in their hands, all the way to the graveyard, digging graves and burying a casket with effigies of their politicians on the side, giving eulogies to the death of liberty. Can you imagine some politician walking down the street, seeing a likeness of himself hanging from a tree? Now, they went to great effort to make these likenesses look exactly like the people they were trying to represent. There was no mistake. There was no mistake. Can you imagine what that would do to a politician? Now, let's be clear. There was no violence. There was no hanging of politicians. Just a political speech manifested in a protest and display that said, we don't like what you're doing. There was no call, let's go march to this politician's house and lynch him, string him up. No, this was, hey, you are an enemy to our rights, you are an enemy to our liberty, you are a traitor to our country, and we will not tolerate this. We are wanting to publicly shame you for what you're doing. You see, that's the difference between protests and rallies. In America today, we don't have protests. We either have rallies or riots. A rally is not a protest. A rally, by definition of the word, is something that we do to encourage the troops. A rally is what you do when you want people to stay in the fight. A protest is what you do when you want to make someone ashamed of their behavior and correct their behavior. That's the difference. When we have rallies and then invite the very politicians who are voting against our rights, that are creating laws and regulations to enslave our speech and regulate our rights, like our rights to keep and bear arms, our right to security and privacy. When we invite those very people to our rallies, those are not protests. As a matter of fact, that's championing the despotism that they espouse. America needs to get back to understanding the difference between a rally, a riot, and a protest. James Madison, in his essay Property, said this: "A man has a property in his opinions and the free communication of them. He has a property of peculiar value in his religious opinions and in the profession and practice dictated by them." He reminds us the purpose of government in freeness of speech. He says government is instituted to protect property of every sort, as well as that which lies in various rights of individuals. James Madison just told us that we have a property in our freedom of speech, in our freedom of press, the dissemination of our opinions, the property of getting together to voice our opinions and voice a demand for a redress of our grievances. These things are actually property. And the purpose of government is to protect property of every sort. That's the property of freedom of speech, freedom of press, the right to peaceably assemble, the right to petition the government for a redress of grievances. That's the purpose of government, to protect our rights, not to manipulate them, not to regulate them, not to control them. When every word you speak is being monitored, when every word you speak, every word you type, everything you do on the internet is being filmed, stored, and recorded by the letter of law. I just want you to think about that for just one second. Do you have freedom of speech? You see, our Supreme Court reflects on this history in their opinions regarding the First Amendment, their opinions regarding freedom of speech. The Supreme Court said in Texas v. Johnson in 1989, "A bedrock principle underlying the First Amendment is that government may not prohibit the expression of an idea simply because society finds the idea itself offensive or disagreeable." I want us to focus in on that. Government may not prohibit the expression of a thought just because the majority of people, whether that majority be in numbers, be in money, or be in power, or just be in a force, the majority does not have the authority to use government to shut down speech, which our Supreme Court recognizes to be a bedrock principle. How do they know that to be a bedrock principle? Because America was built through freedom of speech, freedom of press, the right to peaceably assemble, and the understanding that we have a right to petition our government for a redress of our grievances. Remember, a right not invented by our founders, but inherited through those five documents, through those 700 years that we studied in the history of our Constitution and those genealogy documents, the 1100 Charter of Liberties, the Magna Carta. Remember, Clause 61 in the Magna Carta is where we get our understanding of the right of the people to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Protest is part of that petition. The Supreme Court also said in Rav v. St. Paul in 1992 that hate speech is protected by the First Amendment. You see, it's not speech that's the problem. It's violence that's the problem. Hate speech must be protected by government, not controlled by government, Because when government can control hate speech through the force of government, through fines, through regulation, through imprisonment, denial of rights, if government can do that, then guess what happens? Government gets in the business of defining hate. And then hate, as we know, will not be the hate that makes us free, but the hate that will enslave us to whatever the government thinks is appropriate, which will obviously include not speaking poorly of them. You see, this is the key to the difference between a riot and a protest. This photo that I am showing you right now is not freedom of speech. If you are physically threatening someone in your presence, if they're standing in front of you and you're holding a stick at them, what you're saying while you're holding that stick is not freedom of speech. If you are beating someone in the face, what you are saying is not freedom of speech. If you are telling people, it's time to rise up right now. Let's go. Everybody gather your sticks, your torches, your pitchforks. Let's go get them. That's not freedom of speech. Freedom of speech is limited to the fact that you cannot harm another or control the rights of another. See, that's what Benjamin Franklin said in 1722 in that letter, As Silence Do Good. He says, freedom of speech should know no bounds other than you cannot harm or control the rights of another. That's the limit to freedom of speech. Liberty. Liberty is the limit to freedom of speech. Why? Because liberty and freedom are not the same thing. Liberty is freedom plus morality, that understanding that you are free to say whatever you want, you are free to do whatever you want, but there are things that you cannot do because they're wrong. A politician in a private restaurant, eating dinner with his family, having people come up to his table, stick their finger in his food, shout at him, and disturb the peace of all the other people in the restaurant is not freedom of speech. When somebody comes up to you at a restaurant because you're wearing a hat they don't like or a t-shirt they don't like, and they throw a drink in your face and they yell and they scream at you in this restaurant, that is not freedom of speech. That is criminal conduct. When a politician is eating dinner in a restaurant and people come up to him and make this big fuss and start destroying his food and start creating a disruption within the restaurant, it is the right and the duty of the owner or the manager of that restaurant to call law enforcement to remove those people, not the politicians, the ones that are disturbing the customers and the politician. It is the duty of the officers to remove those people. Because you see, they're trespassing on that property of the restaurant, on that property of peaceful enjoyment, of dinner, of those people in that restaurant. Now, somebody obviously is going to say, but Chrisanne, what about shouting fire in a crowded theater? Isn't that a limitation on speech? Isn't it against the law to shout fire in a crowded theater? No, it is not against the law to shout fire in a crowded theater. It's not against the law to shout anything in a crowded theater. What's against the law is to use your words in a way that will incite violence or injury to another, whether it be intentional or negligent. If you're in a crowded theater and you shout fire and nothing happens, what's the crime? You will admit that's not a crime. If you're in a crowded theater and you shout purple elephant and a riot erupts and people go screaming out of the theater and people are hurt and people are trampled upon, Do we now have to say that shouting purple elephant in a crowded theater is against the law? No, because it's not the words that are under the force of law. It is the action when someone is harmed. When you know that you could be saying something that is going to immediately effectuate the harm of another. That idea of shouting fire in a crowded theater came from a Supreme Court opinion written by Oliver Wendell Holmes, who afterwards repented that he wrote that because of the way it was being used. As a matter of fact, the Supreme Court, in a subsequent opinion, went back to try to clarify what that actually meant, because Oliver Wendell Holmes was not happy that everybody said, oh, now it's illegal to shout fire in a crowded theater. That case that Oliver Wendell Holmes made that statement in is U.S. v. Schenck, and it had nothing to do with fires. It had nothing to do with theaters or even false statements. He was just giving an analogy with something that was not related to the case. In the legal field, we call that dicta, and it has no controlling authority whatsoever. But some people ran with that. People who were either ignorant or disingenuous about their motives to control people's speech. The Supreme Court in Brandenburg v. Ohio effectively overturned that idea when they said that inflammatory speech, even speech that advocated violence by members of the Ku Klux Klan, is protected under the First Amendment. They said specifically that it must be speech directed to inciting or producing imminent lawless action and is likely to incite or produce such action. You ever wonder how politicians can get away with saying things that they say sometimes about each other? Well, that's because they realize there's a fine line there. I can say whatever I want, as long as I'm not directing people to go do what I say. I know that sounds iffy. I know that sounds dangerous. But remember, liberty must be constrained by an internal governor, not an external governor. We must be a moral people if we want to maintain liberty. It's when society, as Samuel Adams says, becomes depraved, debauched in their manners, that liberty fails. Because you look around and you see the debauched nature of the people, and then all of a sudden, hey, we need laws to control this because there's no internal governor. Freedom of speech requires an internal governor, not an external one. Can we remember some of our founders, please? Mercy Otis Warren, first American woman playwright, first American woman political advisor, first American woman historian. She wrote her plays to poke fun, to criticize the government, to encourage the liberty movement. Listen to what Thomas Jefferson wrote in 1786. Our liberty depends on the freedom of press, and that cannot be limited without being lost. And then he wrote in June 14th in 1807, nothing can now be believed which is seen in a newspaper. Truth itself becomes suspicious by being put into that polluted vehicle. The real extent of this state of misinformation is known only to those who are in situations to confront facts within their knowledge with the lies of the day. This is the problem when the government starts dictating the narrative, when politics and politically correct speech start dictating the narrative. The source of freedom of press, the major source of freedom of press, the dissemination of information, becomes corrupted in and of itself. Jefferson also said in 1807, it's a melancholy truth that a suppression of the press could not be more completely deprived the nation of its benefits than is done by its abandoned prostitution to falsehood. When your media becomes a force of politics and opinion rather than a source of unbiased truth, Jefferson called that political prostitution. That's why it's so important for the people ourselves to understand these principles of freedom of speech, freedom of press, the right to peaceably assemble. Because when the media fails, the people must create new outlets for truth. That's why we have the committees of correspondence. Remember, to prevent the government from perverting the judgment of men. How did the government pervert the judgment of men? Through the media. We must be that media. We must be the protest in writing. Freedom of speech. That's why we can't have government dictating to us what we can say on the internet, what is appropriate or inappropriate on the internet. Now, Twitter and Facebook, they are not government. They are private businesses. They can dictate what's on their forum. But if government wants to come in and start regulating, that's wrong. If government wants to prevent you from having a free speech forum where there is no censorship, then that is wrong. It is not freedom of press to destroy people's property, like you see in these photos. That is not freedom of press. That is a criminal activity. And our right to peaceably assemble, all going together with these things. To peaceably assemble all goes together with these things. Listen to what our Supreme Court has said time and time again. Because remember, we are discovering the difference between a protest and a riot here. The Supreme Court in Edwards v. South Carolina, 1963, arresting, convicting, and punishing protesters who are peacefully assembled where there was no violence or threat of violence on their part is a violation of free speech, free assembly, and the freedom to petition. See how they wrapped all of those things together? Because they're all related. The First Amendment has all these rights together because they are so related. You can't oppress one, regulate one, or control one without eliminating all the others. And notice how they said peaceably assembled with no violence on their part. That's the key. Haig v. CIO in 1939, peaceful demonstrators may not be prosecuted for disorderly conduct. Dunlap v. City of Chicago, 1977, local government must provide police in such numbers as in their professional judgment are required to afford adequate protection to the protesters. When we saw these riots happening outside of political meetings, in campaign conferences and conventions, and then we saw and heard the political pundits say, well, it's a difficult time to balance the rights of these people and the people wanting to hold their convention. There is no balance here. If you are not peaceful, you are not having a protest, you are having a riot. If you are destroying people's property, if you are punching people in the face, you are not a protester, you are a criminal. And even according to the Supreme Court, it is the duty of the officers to make sure that that political rally takes place and the criminals are arrested. A political protest is what happened at the Boston Tea Party. Not a riot. That political protest affected government-regulated property. Property that had become so much the property of government that it was you were unable to discern the difference between private and public property. Not only that, just to make matters clear, this was not burning down donut shops and looting television stores. Our founders paid back the East India Trading Company for the price of the product that they lost. They weren't stealing tea so they could drink it. They were destroying tea because of the government's interference with their rights and their liberties. It is not a protest to burn down donut shops and to steal televisions. our women got together with their protest with Penelope Barker and the women in Edenton, North Carolina, protesting and refusing to purchase English-made goods. Freedom of speech, freedom of press, the right to petition the government for a redress of their grievances. We must understand the difference between a riot and a protest. We must understand that government can't be regulating the way we protest. I understand that it's popular today to say things, to be concerned about people who wear masks in protests. Can I remind you that as long as it's peaceful, it doesn't matter what you wear? Our founders were dressed as Mohican Indians to disguise themselves. Allowing government to regulate how we protest, where we protest, and the garments that we can wear is now another limitation of a freedom of speech, press, and petitioning the government for a redress of your grievances. It is not a matter of safety or security. It's simply a matter of regulation, unlawful one. I want to read to you what Thomas Paine wrote. He said, "An avidity to punish is always dangerous to liberty. It leads men to stretch, to misinterpret, and to misapply even the best of laws. He that would make his own liberty secure must guard even his enemy from oppression. For if he violates this duty, he establishes a precedent that will reach unto himself." Remember, our founders dressed up to hide their faces so they would not be prosecuted because the government was regulating their speech, their right to peaceably assemble. We cannot allow our government to assume a power expressed by the British government and condemned by the writers of our First Amendment. Don't go for laws against masks. Go for the protection of freedom of speech, so people don't have to be afraid to speak to motivate them to wear masks. Our Supreme Court has often said that it is the duty of our peacekeepers, sheriffs, police officers to protect the peaceful protesters. This idea that you have to balance between somebody destroying property and somebody peacefully protesting is a lie. It is confusion invented to control what we say and what we do peacefully. Listen to what the Supreme Court says. Glasson v. City of Louisville in 1975. A police officer has the duty not to ratify and effectuate a heckler's veto, nor may he join in a moiling mob intent on suppressing ideas. Instead, he must take reasonable action to protect from violence persons exercising their constitutional rights. When officers give in to the violence to shut down someone's peaceful speech, what they're actually doing is becoming an advocate for that violence. They're supporting the suppression of speech. That's why our Supreme Court has said over and over again, it is the job of our police officers, of our sheriffs, of our mayors, of those in government to protect those who are peacefully assembling. If you are destroying property, if you are hurting people, you have committed a criminal act, and our law enforcement has an obligation and a duty to enforce the law against those crimes. The Supreme Court, Gregory v. Chicago, 1969, "To let a policeman's command be equivalent to a criminal statute comes dangerously near making our government one of men rather than of laws. Officers must take all responsible effort to protect peaceful protesters and demonstrators." Once again, these are photos of a riot, not a protest. And we have to know the difference if we're going to ensure that freedom of speech is protected. As we finish up this segment on the difference between a riot and a protest, I hope we've made the distinction abundantly clear. Destruction of property, violations of people's rights, violence against people is not a protest. It is a riot. And the essential elements of freedom of speech, freedom of press, the right to peaceably assemble, the right to petition our government for a redress of grievances are so intimately wrapped amongst each other that the regulation of one is the elimination of the others. We must be protecting speech. It is the bedrock of who we are. It is how we became America, protesting against the violation of our rights committed by the government that was ours back then, the British government. If you have to violate someone's rights, someone's property, someone's liberty, then you are not engaging in a peaceful protest. Remember, it is not against the law to shout fire in a crowded theater. It's not against the law to shout anything in a crowded theater. And hate speech is protected. It is not a crime. There is no such crime as hate speech. You don't go to prison for speaking hateful words. That is another lie that is disseminated to cause you to control your own thoughts, to enslave yourself through your mind, so you won't speak something that's against the law. Hate speech is protected. Even the Supreme Court says so. You can't say things that cause violence to other people, directing mobs to attack. You can't do the famous Frankenstein film where the man stands up on the box and says, "Grab your pitchforks, grab your torches, grab your axes, let's go get them," and they all march off. That is a violation of the law. That is inciting riot and violence. It's not against the law to speak words. But when your actions call for violence and the imminent carrying out of that violence, imminent is the key, that's where the violation takes place. And while we're here, let's just be clear, there is no such thing as a free speech zone. No county, no officer, no federal agent can make you stand in a box for your speech. Our founders knew, and even our Supreme Court recognizes, that streets and public sidewalks and public property are the places where protests are supposed to take place. You cannot violate someone else's liberty or property and maintain a right. It becomes a crime. So we need to keep learning every day. We need to keep sharing this information every day. We need to remember the importance of freedom of speech. Daniel Webster said, "If all my possessions were taken from me with but one exception, I would choose to keep the power of communication, for by it I would soon regain all the rest." Notice he didn't say freedom of speech. He said the power of communication, because freedom of speech, freedom of press, the right to peaceably assemble, the right to petition the government of a redress of your grievances are all the powers of communication. I hope that this has laid a brief foundation for you to understand the difference between a riot and a protest. Here's what I want you to do as LFU students. Whenever you see a journalist referring to these riots as protests, whenever you see a politician referring to a riot as a protest, whenever you see a professor referring to a riot as a protest, please, 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 take the time and the effort to correct them. Send them these Supreme Court opinions and show them that hate speech is protected, that we're not here to protect popular speech, we're here to protect offensive speech. You don't have a right to not be offended. We have a right to be offensive. Morality says that we are to love one another, to be kind with one another, to treat each other with love when we are wrong. It is morality that controls our tongue, not government. Take the time to take back the narrative, or nothing else is going to change. That's why you're here at Liberty First University, to be the change. Thank you.